second work session on House Bill 5040, Board of Nursing. And we will, when the other members come in, we will actually go into the work session. For now, we will begin with the overview.
Want to go ahead and open 5039?
We'll open also House Bill 5039.
Okay. So as a way of review, the Board of Nursing is regulates the practice of nursing and nursing practice and nursing education. Their goal, their mission is to protect public health, safety, and well-being of individuals who need nursing services. They have the authority to revoke or suspend licenses and the privilege to practice.
Excuse me. We'll welcome our new member.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
And I also forgot today, Rosie and Rosette. And to our new member, Rosie and Rosette is there to collect
PD banks
money when we use acronyms.
Ah.
And at the end of session, the funds collected will go to the Oregon Food Bank.
Oh, great.
So we not only tax ourselves, but we tax the individuals who testify before us.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
May I make a clarification?
Yes, you may.
Representative Scott, the money that the chair is referring to does not come in the form of change.
It's green bills.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Just to keep everything straight in this committee. Okay. Please proceed, Judy.
In addition to licensing individuals, the Board of Nursing also administers a nurse monitoring program that assists licensed nurses who have health or other problems that are interfering with their professional competency. Gives them an opportunity to do some remedial activities and have a working relationship with a consultant to improve their skills and retain their active life as a professional. It started as substance abuse and has grown over the time to include other disabilities. The board is supported solely by other fund revenues, generated largely from license and examination fees. They also receive a fairly large chunk of federal funds, that is Medicaid, Medicare dollars, to sustain or to help support the Certified Nursing Assistance Program. In Oregon and across the nation, adequate health care increasingly depends upon a sufficient supply of nurses and nursing assistants. They are not only the largest group of health care workers, but are also the ones closest to patient care. There is an ongoing shortage in Oregon for nursing professionals, and that has created kind of an issue for the Board of Nursing, because as they have worked to improve the opportunities for training and recruitment of nursing professionals, it also leads to additional licensing and work for that agency. In 1998, in Oregon, there were 629 graduates of Oregon nursing programs. They expect in 2005 to increase that to 900. So we are gradually increasing that. A nurse cannot practice in the state of Oregon unless they have a license, even if they are licensed in another state. So that puts additional pressure upon the board to process applications in a quick manner. Looks like we have a quorum.
Okay. For the record, we have a quorum.
House Bill 5040 simply ratifies a fee that was implemented last session. It is a emeritus license for retired nurses. It allows them to continue to hold their RN title, even though they are no longer practicing and have sufficient hours to continue the regular license. That reduced fee is $20 a biennium, compared to $85 or $65 depending on the class of license. That was implemented last session, and 5040 simply ratifies that fee increase as required by Senate Bill 333, passed in 1995. So we'll move on to the budget bill. The budget relies upon two fee adjustments that are in the process right now. They last revised their fee schedule in 1999. They proposed to increase two fees this term, this session. One is for registered nurses and LPNs, an increase of $20 a biennium. The second is for CNA certification examination. They'll increase that by $10. and also increase certification or renewal by endorsement by $5 a biennium. This continues to be competitive with other states in the area. And so far, the stakeholders have been advised of this. The first reading of those proposed fee increases is out to the public, and they have had little opposition to it.
Mr. You may want to explain for those members who have not been a part of either e-board or Ways and Means when you talk about ratification of fee adjustments, because they may not know that the action on this took place before this body. Look at it. So you may want to do an explanation.
Okay. As part of the budget development process, an agency will determine if they have adequate fees or whether they need to increase those fees. If they choose to find a need to increase the fees, that will become a part of the proposed budget and will come before the legislature for review as part of the budget package. Then they will, if we agree to that, they will then implement those fees during that biennium, during the interim to the session. Then come back to the next legislature to advise that those fees have in fact been issued, have been raised, and it is up to the legislative assembly then to ratify it by passing a bill.
So actually we're taking action after something has already occurred.
And that is what 5040 does. The two new proposed fees are two increases that are proposed for this session to review as part of the budget process. And if we adopt their budget, including those fees, then they would go forward with the implementation process.
I do have a question, whether they have been before the policy committee with their request or not.
No, because it's not a bill this time.
That's not a bill this time.
There'll be a bill next time.
Okay.
Okay. As part of the budget package, again, for those members that are new to the process, the budget is drafted by the governor's staff and primarily the Department of Administrative Services working with the agencies. And that becomes the governor's recommended or balanced, this term or session, we're calling it the balanced budget. From that then, LFO develops its recommendations in working with the legislature on how those, on what it will become the recommended budget, the adopted budget. Part of the budget process starts by creating a base budget that is essentially what the budget is if we didn't make any changes. Then we add to that policy option packages that are reviewed. Some are considered essential packages and that the agency could not function without those. Then there are option packages that are things that are added to recognize changes that have happened over the last biennium and will be continuing into the coming biennium. The agency has four packages that they would like for us to consider. The first one is package 101 for their customer service center and production center. This package completes the expansion of the customer service center and the production center to increase its efficiency and prepare for electronic or e-government. The center was a remodel of the board's front office and reception area and was started in response to a very high demand during the OHSU strike to respond to all of the calls coming in as they tried to bring in temporary nurses to fill that need. One position currently exists in the package, proposes adding four positions. One position already exists as a limited duration position that has been filled for the past 2 years. There are two of those positions that have been filled by temporary staff for most of the last 2 years. The final position was proposed to increase their ability to train and back up the other positions. We have continued to work with the agency on how best to do this, and LFO's proposal now is to delete the three proposed permanent positions, to change the limited duration position to a permanent position, and to increase one part-time position. In total, we would be adding 1.25 FTE instead of the 3.75 that was proposed. We propose to leave the expenditure limitation as is because the temporary positions will continue to be in use, and the cost is actually pretty similar between hiring a temporary after everything is paid compared to hiring that has a permanent position.
Representative Smith.
Thank you.
D. Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. I need a reminder. The package would complete the expansion of the customer service and production center.
Yes.
Where's the center? How much does it cost? And what was the square footage cost?
Actually, they used existing space, and the agency can probably better address that. They could come forward.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. Chair Winters, members of the committee. I am Pat Miles. I am the budget officer for the Board of Nursing. We came last spring to an e-board in April of 2002 with our proposal for forming a call center. The concept was to separate customer service one-on-ones with production, if you will, processing of applications. What we received from that emergency board was the wherewithal or the budget authority to do the construction. This was an existing office space. We reconfigured it so that it basically became a place where operators could sit and do services for people as they came in or called into the office. I don't have the exact figure. It was a couple hundred thousand, and it was primarily it was the remodel and the equipment that was necessary. We didn't seek any personnel expenditures at that time. We reshuffled our existing staff and hired temps kind of out of existing budget to make it through the rest of the biennium.
And just follow up.
Follow
up. And those were other funds, dollars that were used for the remodeling expense?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, yes, that is. All of our money is other funded, and in fact, all the money that was spent in the current biennium was out of the what we call the RN, the Registered Nurse LPN pot, not out of the money that we receive matching funds from Department of Human Services. This for the nursing assistant program. This was out of the regular nursing funds.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Go ahead, Ms. Jane.
Next package that is described is Package 103. It is an information technology package. It proposes a one-time expenditures to expand their information technology use for a software package for license issue and renewal processes and to continue their migration towards e-government. The package proposes hiring a limited duration database administrator to continue work started by a prior limited duration position. We recommend making that position permanent in recognition of an ongoing need for a database administrator as they migrate on into e-government. This position, the work that is proposed to be done by the database administrator is now actually shared by three positions in the office, and they just have begun working on a tentative agreement with the Board of Pharmacy to provide the same database administration services for the board. And there would be an interagency agreement if that is accomplished. And what we recommend is to add $210,661 other funds expenditure limitation and add one full-time position, permanent full-time position, and that is for the database administrator. The next package that is described is Package 104. That is for office reconfiguration. The package proposes one-time expenditures to create an actual computer room for technology equipment. Right now, that equipment exists in a closed closet, and they're getting a little bit too much sophisticated equipment to continue to use a closed closet. They also propose to finish furnishing a conference room that is actually used by all of the small boards and commissions on the fourth floor of the office building, but it will also be largely used by the board, and that is to allow them to use teleconferencing. This will not only upgrade and reduce travel time for meetings, will also increase training opportunities both for their staff and to also give that training to nursing professionals. And we propose giving them an additional $200,000 other fund expenditure limitation. There are no FTEs with this package. The fourth package is Package 102. It is an enhancement to their investigation programs. There is an ongoing demand for prompt investigation and resolution of complaints. there's also continuing growth of nursing professionals that seek assistance through both the diversion program or the nurse monitoring program, not only for substance abuse but for other disabilities presenting an obstacle to nursing practice. And as I mentioned earlier, it is important to the nursing professionals to have that. It allows us to keep experienced people available and in the workforce by going through the nurse monitoring program. There is an ongoing shortage in nursing professionals that has, and not only nursing professionals, but physicians. Nurses are increasingly being asked to do more things of a higher technical nature, and that increases the need for the board to research and address scope of practice issues and other best practice issues so that they can provide the best service possible without going beyond the scope of their license.
Representative Smith.
I'm digressing on you. I apologize, Chair. Something just hit me. Back on the office reconfiguration, what type of room are we building and furnishings are we buying for $200,000?
I'll let the HP address that.
Pat Miles, Budget Officer again. Representative Smith, Chair Winters. The $200,000 is actually doing a lot of things. When we created the call center last spring, we took our old conference room and moved it and put the call center there. The rest of the office is, I'd almost call it a warren. It's not set up with DAS standards, and they're very odd shapes, and there's no place to put anyone. Basically, if we add a body, we have people working in spaces that were never designed to be workspaces. What this does is it actually reconfigures the rest of the existing office space so that it's used to its fullest. It creates a computer room, that's very true. And one of the major costs of this actually is the what they call the HVAC system. I'm not sure what that stands for, but it's the air conditioning and heating, which over time in the Portland State Office Building has actually started closing, so we have poor air quality. And as they've re-engineered the lighting and the heating and the air conditioning in the building, that's about half of our costs. So the $200,000 actually covers the computer room, which is a very urgent need because of the temperatures that equipment reaches, but also the rest of the living space, the working space, if you will, for the board office.
So is the $200,000 based upon an in-house estimate, or are they based upon actual bids?
Chair Winters, Representative Smith, these are actually built on estimates. What we are talking about is we have a contract that DAS entered into on our behalf to do the entire office, and it was put into phases, as it were. There's about $85,000 there that is for the construction, and that's a hard number that we will pay. And then we have additional funding or costs here that are a hard estimate from the state's contractor for systems furniture and the reconfiguration of that furniture. And so, yes, they are built on hard facts.
For the information of members, DAS is the agency that does all of the bidding, and once the agencies get the information back from DAS, that's what goes into their budget. So all the contract negotiations and bidding is done through the DAS agency. Thank you. Senator Gordley and then Representative Scott.
Before she gets a wedge, because we're still talking about 102, right? Policy change,
yes.
102. If you could, we're just receiving today a letter that responds to questions that we asked at our hearing back in, what was that, January or February?
February, I
believe. Right. So we're just now, today, having an opportunity to try to read this quickly and digest it and see what relates to the budget that's in front of us. And I'm looking at the response to issue 3 on the second page of the letter. Do you have that in front of you?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Issue three was the question, what is included in the line item of board expenses?
Yes, ma'am, I can answer that question.
Okay. And this, the policy package addresses expanding the board's capacity to review new applications. And I'm just wondering if there's something in the answer that you've, in the response that you've given us that also relates to what's in the budget package. Are you following me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Chair Winter, Senator Gordley. The amount referred to in our hearing back in February was the amount that's, if you will, allocated to board expenses. Those expenses are not, those are set expenses. They are not asked for in any of these policy packages. So that's the basic answer, that it's not part of this. What that consists of, we have communications expenses, attorney general expenses, in-state travel. Those items are existing line items and existing amounts in our basic budget. The items in package 102 are for an additional staffer who would be able to work with committees, task forces, and the nursing community to work through policy issues, help draft policy papers for the board, et cetera. Does that answer your question?
Somewhat. Somewhat. Thank you, Madam Chair. There's another expense in the that's referred to in the response here on issue three that refers to an amount to cover out-of-state travel.
Out-of-state travel is about $6,000 as allocated to the board. The nursing community in all the states and U.S. territories works on a very national level, and Oregon is actually one of the leaders in the country with nursing issues. They belong to the National Council of State Boards of Nursing. The amounts of out-of-state travel for the board are to go to the annual meeting that's national, and then there's also an Area 1 meeting that's on the West Coast each year. And depending on the location, $1,500 is kind of a ballpark, between $1,500 and $2,000 for each trip. So $6,000 gets you, if you're lucky, four board member out-of-state trips or conference.
That's helpful.
Thank you.
Okay. I think that was the policy package 102, investigation enhancement. What they propose to do, because they have not only a requirement to investigate and act upon complaints in a set time period, and they are having increasing trouble doing that, the nurse practice consultants also provide in-service or continuing education training for nursing professionals because of other things that they are addressing, primarily through the nurse monitoring program. They are not as able to provide that training as they once were. And finally, the number of nursing professionals seeking assistance through the nurse monitoring program has continued to grow, and it now exceeds over 300 open cases. They propose to add one nursing consultant, one nurse investigator full-time, and one office specialist part-time to support those positions. They propose adding $305,000, $792,000, other funds expenditure limitation, and adding three permanent positions of 2.5 FTE. And this will allow them to better address not only scope of practice issues and best practice issues, but to be more proactive in addressing complaints that come into the agency. Okay, those are the four policy
those
options.
The four policy action package.
Do you want to?
Let's start with 5040.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morris.
Would like to ask some questions.
Sure, certainly.
If I may.
You may go.
What would be the source of funds for the capital improvements? Questions further? if I may.
Chair Winters, Senator Morse, this is Pat Miles again from the budget officer. I'm starting to forget who I am here. The $200,000 for the office reconfigure would be based, how should I put this, percentage-wise for all licensees. We have a little under a third of our licensees are nursing assistants, and a little over two-thirds are the nurses. They would be equally shared by all licensees, but it is all other funds. It would come out of our normal cash balance.
So the funds would come out of fees then?
That is correct. Because second, all of our...
Second question. And this bothers me when I look at your cash balances in the context of a fee increase, why we're doing that when we have cash balances that, of the magnitude that your department has.
Chair Winters, Senator Morris, I only expecting that you're seeing like the final ending balance, not the month-to-month cash balance. Judy James has prepared some graphs with that information.
In your packet, there is. I've seen that, yes.
Our cash balance actually does not go above 3 months at any time, 3 months operating expenses. The budget ending balance is somewhat artificial because of when things are paid. We actually have a delay in our cash receipts for the nursing assistant program because we must wait till the month is closed, which is halfway through the next month, before we can bill Department of Human Services for those costs and transfer approximately 50% of that money to them. So we actually have to carry that program over up to at least 2 months sometimes without any cash infusion. We do receive our regular fees on a daily basis, and that covers us, but we generally do not have more than 2.5 months cash balance at any time.
But Madam Chairman, if you look at the trend line, those cash balances are increasing significantly on a month-by-month basis over the biennium. And as a matter of public policy, I don't think that's good policy.
Ms. James, can you explain your graph?
Yes. So if I need to find a picture of my graph. Thank you. What the first graph is showing you is the cash balances and also compares it against a three-month expenditure line. And what you'll see is, yes, there is some increase, but if you flip on the other side and look at what their cash balance is by month as compared to their 3 months, you'll see that the cash balance is actually somewhat more variable.
Then, Madam Chair,
follow-up.
Then what you're suggesting is this is not a realistic cash flow projection?
This is 03-05, and it's because the reason why it is coming up is because it includes that rate increase. If we did not have the rate increase, you would see it continuing to decline.
Well, you've made my point. Thank you.
This is an agency that tends to change its fees about every 3 to 5 years, and that is why you see an increase and a decline over time. They try to keep it on an equal balance, but it's about a 3 to 6 year gap.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess to have a cash flow projection that builds cash to that extent, I just question whether we're performing the right kind of fiduciary responsibility for the people in this program. That's my concern.
But so. The question I would ask is if the cash flow exceeds, if the reserves exceed more than 3 months with the fee increase.
There may be a time that it exceeds 3 months kind of at the peak, and you're seeing that peak coming at the end of the 03-05 biennium, and then it will begin declining again and be under 3 months by the time they come back to the 05-07 session.
So it's only because they're doing their collections,
right.
Yeah?
Right.
This agency, we've asked them to go back, I know last session, to look at their whole reserve and to look at if there's a better way for them to collect their fees, to even stagger their fees so that, you know, they, and they have done an analysis of it. If I recall last session, that it was not prudent for them to stagger because of the amount of work that's involved with the nurses themselves. So,
yes.
So.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
And Senator Morris, I want to make sure I'm clear on this too now, because I thought when I read it, I understood it. I want to make sure I'm clear. The black line with the triangles on top indicates a 3-month reserve month by month, right?
Correct.
So at no time in the next 24 months do we expect the reserve to go above, looks like about 2.5 months. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, that's correct.
There is a slight upward swing in the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th month. If that were to continue, it would go past that. But in the next 2 years, we don't expect that.
No.
And you think it's going to level off after that?
I think it will actually begin to decline.
Decline.
That should be very close to
but we'll be back in session by that time. We can look at it again. So
right.
I want to make sure I'm perfectly clear. It's 2.5 months.
Yeah, the line is 2.5 months.
Yeah. 3 months.
3 months.
The line is 3 months, but no, at no time do we get even close to 3 months. We're getting at 2.5 months at the most here. Right?
Right.
Senator Morris, and then Reverend Scott, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to chime in with Senator Morris. I think that based upon, I don't know where these numbers are coming from or where the governor's balanced budget, revised budget comes from, but according to his budget, there is 1.177 beginning cash balance in it. And if you take the 7.8 million proposed other fund expenditure budget, there obviously is never a need for the amount of cash that they have. The cash flow that they generate, if you use this chart, whether it be 3 months or what it may be. I mean, what's magical about 3 months ending cash balance or month-to-month cash balance? Why do you need 3 months operating cash? And in this projection, it ranges from a low of what appears to be $380,000, which would be about 1 month's worth of operating cash, upwards to over $800,000.
The Department of Administrative Services and the State Controller's Office are the ones that recommend a minimum 3-month reserve and up to a 6-month reserve, depending on the agency.
I'm aware of that, and if I may.
I'm going to put this in context. The agency's reserve balance and what the agencies are following is what they've been directed to do by both DAS and the Comptroller. This body, if the legislative body wants to change that, then I think it behooves legislators to do it, that we either say that we agree or disagree with the policy that's been set forth by DAS and by the Comptroller. And, you know, the agencies are only carrying out what they've been instructed to do, and it's up to us if we think that that is not prudent for us to then make those changes. Every agency that's coming before us, that particularly those that are fee and other fund agencies, I think we're going to see the same thing. But it is the legislative, it's a legislative prerogative, a policy discussion that this body needs to have. And, you know, you just happen to see the first agency before us, and they're doing exactly what they have been instructed to do by their parent, DAS, and the Comptroller. So they are within, actually, they're below what they have been instructed, because most agencies have been instructed to retain at least 3 months of operating cost in reserve. I need to put that on record, because I don't want the agency, I don't want it being felt by the public that somehow this agency is coming before us with a reserve that they just kind of did that. They did not on their own volition. It was done because they're instructed by DAS and the comptroller to do so. Just
Madam Chair, thank you for clarifying that. I think that's helpful. My concern, I guess, is driven more to the policy issue. We have an expenditure limitation. Once we set that, that is the limitation, correct? There would be no more.
They cannot spend
anymore. They cannot spend anymore.
And then my question would follow as a policy question, is what is the volatility of the fee income? And if the volatility of the fee income is, you know, is very, very low, then the policy of requiring such large reserves is probably an unwise policy. If you had the volatility where you really did need it and, you know, something really crashed and you had to have those funds to make the department or the agency work, then fine. So this discussion, I guess, will happen in every agency we go through here. I
think it's a bigger policy discussion that we need to have as a body. To be honest with you, it's a policy discussion that the legislators need to have with respect to this particular issue. This has been in practice by the legislature since, you know, for some time. And if we want to change that...
Sometime means time in memoriam.
Okay, yeah. And if it's the desire of this body to change that, then I think it is a policy decision made by, you know, all 90 of these members that's in this in the two chambers, you know, to instruct DAS and the comptroller that, you know, in the future that reserves will only be at a certain level. But certainly the agencies, rather than having this discussion with every agency that come before us, every agency that comes before us will come before us with a certain amount of reserves, unless from a policy standpoint we say that's not what's going to happen. And they have been instructed to at least 3 months, if I can remember, having the agencies before us, because we raised this last session, and I think we relayed the previous session of this particular issue, and maybe it's time for this body to begin to have some discussion with DAS and internally within ourselves as to whether this really is the policy that we're going to retain in the state of Oregon. Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, I speak for a moment in support of you. This would be a huge policy change to go to a 30-day ending balance. And it's a discussion which should not, I don't believe, occur budget by budget by budget. It will never get out of here until Christmas. And if it's a policy change this body wants to go to or a group wants to go to, then it should be discussed at that level, but not budget by budget. Yeah. It will never get out of here. We just won't.
Right.
And we've already passed out probably 20 or 25 budget based on that policy. It could still be amended, but it's not going to be easy. That's a big decision process. There's pros and cons to it, obviously, especially in time of tight budgets. Those questions start popping up more, and it makes me a little nervous that we're looking at budget shortfalls, and now we start looking at situations where we start skimming things to try to make things work. So it's a policy decision. It's a big one. But I don't think it's the time or place for it.
There's another piece that connects to this that also that agencies, and that is the, and I asked Ms. James to explain the ratification, because ratification also has an impact on this decision. Mm-hmm. You know, it's where the agency has already gone for it, and sometimes they go through policy to get their increases, and then they come to this body, and it's already happened. So I think there's two major policy decisions that are outside the scope of this budget committee. Senator Gordley, and then Representative Smith. I mean, Senator Carter, I'm sorry. All three of us do.
Madam Chair, this is not the kind of question that can only be answered here. This is a yearly legislative question. E-Board only meets every 2 months. You cannot possibly go to a 30-day ending balance approach in this body. We are in every odd year legislature. And so that's why the 3 months is, I've been here on the Ways and Means Committee since 1987, and 3 months was selected even before then, because we are a citizen legislature that only meets every odd year. And so it's good that we have this conversation today, because if we have it again on every budget, it's just going to facilitate more time.
We'll be here till December.
And with that statement in mind, Madam Chair, as soon as you're prepared to take my motion, I'm prepared to for passage.
Representative Bates?
Nothing to add.
Nothing to add.
Madam Chair,
I have a question.
I'm sorry. Representative Smith. I've got to learn to look at
first.
Which Smith?
T. Smith.
T. Smith. Our great
she
Smith.
Asked me to,
okay. I deferred to my
T. Friend. Smith.
I guess I'm of the opinion, I agree with Senator Morris. I came in to this issue not even aware of what was going on, but I think a blanket policy on what we should have as an ending balance isn't prudent. I actually think it's bureaucratic. And I think it's in our best interest to look at the volatility of the revenue streams associated with these ending balances. And those that are more volatile probably should have a higher ending balance than those that are not. Now, with that said, I'm not sure what you do in the situation, because the fact of the matter is this money is other funds revenue. It's generated from other funds revenue. And I've had an opportunity to speak with the folks who are paying this, and they don't seem to be opposed to it now. So I guess I'm mixed in my thoughts, but I just wanted to make what I was thinking known.
Are we going to vote on these policy packages separately?
Traditionally, we don't, because you're either going to pass out the bill or we're not going to pass the bill out.
Okay.
Which one? Is it 5039?
I'm talking about the policy packages. And
the budget bill? You want
the different policy?
The bill? We can do that.
Pensions.
Yes.
I move that we pass, that we accept policy package 101.
For the
nursing, isn't it 101?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Policy package 101. I have my little notes in there. Customer Service Center and Production Center. Mm-hmm.
And that
that's
package.
That's the call
center. And that package is complete the expansion of the Customer Service and Production Center.
And that package is $324,732 other funds expenditure limitation and 3.75 FTE.
So moved.
I have.
Thank you, Chair Winters. I want to be able to support the entire package, so I just have one last question.
Okay.
Under professional services, it looks like there's large budgeted items. Can someone share with me what professional services constitutes and what that money's being used for? I just want to be able to support the entire budget, and I'm still confused on that.
Chair Wendersman, members of the committee, budget package 101, $345,624 are in the personal services. That is a two-year salary. It is also what they referred to as other personnel expenses. In other words, this is the medical insurance, this is the taxes, this is the PERT, the retirement fund, all the costs associated with an individual. So what you see on page 75 of your budget binder with the numbers all broken out, the final right-hand column is the total cost, which is considerably more than what the employee actually sees for that 2 years.
There
are no professional services in package 101.
Entire budget.
Professional services Are you referring to the package, or are you referring to the entire budget?
The entire
budget. The entire budget.
I'm under supporting documents. I'm on page 5 of 7.
I'm sorry. I understand what you're saying now.
This is my last question, so I can feel good about the entire
budget. I understand what you're saying now. Professional services for our agency primarily are for the costs of hearings officers, for the costs of testing personnel. In other words, if someone's administering a test for us, that number actually seems a little high to me. I'm trying to look for it in my 128,000. Actually, that's right in there. Temporary services.
When are we those hire the services that you purchase?
Yes, these are people doing work for us that are not our employees. If we bring in, as in package 103, which is our information technology, we ask for $20,000 for programming. That goes into professional services. So anyway, we have to hire expertise would go into that.
One last follow-up on this.
Follow-up.
What efficiencies were you able to gain to go from $201,099 down to a request of $128,000?
Chair Winters, Representative Smith, this was actually a bit of a bookkeeping change. In the spring of 1999, our nursing assistant testing was what we call outsourced. We used to do all of the management of the tests in-house. We came to that legislature. We got permission to basically outsource that whole process to a vendor. So those costs that were sitting in professional services were moved into the line item on the next page, which is agency program-related S&S. So you notice that it goes up about the same amount the other one went down because it's paid as a block.
Thank you.
We have a motion to accept policy package 101.
I do need to make one correction. I misspoke. It is 1.25 FTE.
Two FTEs have been removed.
Mm-hmm.
Is there
correct in the narrative? It's just not in the summary.
Instead of 3.75 FTE, it's 1.75 FTE.
2.5.
I mean 2.5.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Is there any objection?
Objection.
Noted that T. Smith and
objection.
Wayne Scott.
Move policy package 102 that adds $305,792 in other funds expenditure limitation with how many positions now?
I need a majority of the House to move.
Oh, I need a majority of the House to move, so you need to get co-chair. You need to get Randy.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I'll go. While we're waiting,
I'll go.
Just a comment. I recall from our hearing in January or February, we had quite a lengthy discussion about what could be done to with the nursing shortage, what could be done to increase outreach, what could be done with regard to teaching programs, et cetera.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
And we asked several questions that have been responded to in issue 2 in the document that captures the questions that we raised at the during the hearings. And I just want to say that it is difficult to get the information in this form and late in the process without a really good opportunity to review and digest what's here and to have a substantive discussion with the agency about what's here relating back to the questions that we raised back in January, February, because, again, that was quite an extensive discussion we had with the agency. And I just feel that we're not devoting the time that we need to at this moment to fully grasp where we are.
I just have one, you know, and I'll say to the agency that this information should have been brought before us before now. It helps to facilitate the process when members have raised questions before we come into your work sessions. But I, you know, and I also, as we begin to move towards an end game in this building, and those of us who have been here for a while know that things kind of move rather rapidly, and you just happen to be one of the first agencies up, and I apologize. Okay, let's go back.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move policy package 101, and for the sake of our co-chair, it adds $324,000 in other funds and 1.25 positions. That was up to 3.75, Madam Chair, and we reduced that amount.
We will. Is there any objection to policy package 101?
Okay. Are you calling a roll,
yes,
or are you looking for...
I'm starting with the vote on 101, Mr. Co-Chair.
Oh.
Policy Package 101, which is the Customer Service Center and Production Center. The original request for that was to have, was a request for 3.75 FTE. We did not grant them that request. Instead, we said that we would grant 1.25.
And the one position is an existing limited duration that will become permanent.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. I understand there's someone beyond me that has a slight hesitation. I'd hate to proceed on this in the affirmative and have to rework it. So I'm going to have to be a no for the present.
Well, I think then if there is some concern on that side of the aisle with respect to this budget, then I don't want to proceed with the budget. We will come back, reschedule the budget after whatever concerns that are at issue with the House. I should say the House down at that end, and before we bring it back. I don't want to bring the agency back and bring others back here to have a budget that presumably I thought that the co-chairs had seen and had passed on to then say that, no, that isn't the case. So with that, we are adjourned. I need to reopen for just information only from a group that's going to talk to us about saving money.
In the mental
and we need
area.
10 minutes in the mental health area. Anthony?
Chair, can you do that without all of us present?
Well, that's your decision. If you don't, I've got to go down to another meeting.
So do I.
But we have, and they came just to talk to us about mental health and how we can save money. And so,
if you tell them
We only have about 5 minutes. I'm sorry, because I need to be another meeting at 3:00.
We all do. Yeah.
I'll call my office and I'll have a call.
Okay.
Oh, what the hell are they telling me? I don't like this.
I'm not sure. Sorry.
Well, fine. Yeah, let them do it.
They do it. I don't want to see.
Good afternoon, Chair Winters, Senators and Representatives. My name is Donna Mosh. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer of Comprehensive Neuroscience Incorporated. We're an organization that develops best practice guidelines in medicine, research in the neuroscience areas, and we have a particular program called the Behavioral Pharmacy Management System, which I came to talk to you about today. I'd like to thank you all for your time. I know it is brief. We have a set of slides, and we have copies of those for everyone. In the interest of time, I am not going to attempt to take you through the slides. So if I may, I'd like to make a half a dozen points and leave you the opportunity to answer questions. My colleague, Dr. Sandra Forker, is here with me. My background is that prior to working on the Behavioral Pharmacy Management System with Comprehensive Neuroscience, I served as the CEO of Magellan's Public Solutions Group, working with state Medicaid programs around the country to improve the quality and care management of services to persons with mental illnesses and addictions. I served as the state mental health director in Rhode Island, the state division of mental health, substance abuse, and forensic medicine director in Massachusetts, and served as the special master to Federal District Court Judge Aubrey Robinson in the healthcare, mental health care reform in Washington, D.C. I'm pleased to be here today, Dr. Forker. Get to it? Is that what they're saying? Get to it. I thought you should know who you had talking to you, but anyway, I will get to it. I understand that Oregon, like other states, is facing a serious economic situation, and we've come today to talk to you about a public-private partnership that could assist in saving the state money while preserving what are the state's values to assure access to psychiatric medications. The Behavioral Pharmacy Management System saves dollars while investing in education of practitioners so that quality of prescribing is improved and leading to better compliance and adherence to treatment regimens by consumers in the care system. We know that treatment works. We also know that education works. And our product is evidence-driven. What we do effectively is take the science associated with what is effective in pharmacologic treatment of mental disorders, and we have created a set of measures or algorithms. Some of you may have heard of TMAP, the Texas algorithms. We have a set of algorithms that are designed to measure pharmacy claims data. We analyze those pharmacy claims data and identify where prescribing practice falls outside of what the consensus in the field would agree and the research would dictate is best practice. And we then focus on those practitioners.
Doctor, can we just stop you for a minute?
Certainly.
Please explain the piece that you were saying in terms of when you check on the it seems like some kind of accountability system that you had in place when you, if there's a check and balance system to what you do. And I just kind of want to hear about that piece because I think that's the problem we're having in Oregon.
Okay. What we find, and we are working now in a number of states as well as with Medicaid programs and in health plans, is that for a certain portion of the Medicaid recipients who are prescribed psychiatric medications, there are some problems with the quality of prescribing. In some cases, there are therapeutic, what they call therapeutic duplications of drugs. People get more than one drug of a similar type, like an atypical antipsychotic medication. In some places, you'll have a percentage of patients who are getting two or more of those drugs, even though the literature would not support the need to have multiple drugs from the same class.
I'm going to have to apologize as a chair.
Yes.
I need to be chairing another committee on the Oregon Health Plan. But Senator Carter and Senator Morris and Representative Smith will be here, and they will let me know what occurs. And
thank
I do apologize.
Thank you kindly, Chair Winter. Shall I continue?
Yes.
There are other areas that we are quality and prescribing issues. Sometimes there is excess dosing. People are on more of a particular drug than the FDA labeling would suggest, and our analysis measures this. Now, this is a problem in some cases because excess dosing means more side effects. Patients are not interested in side effects. It's the leading reason why patients stop taking their medication, which creates a lot of health risk for them and cost to the system of care. Sometimes there's inadequate dosing. People are getting too low a dose to get a therapeutic effect. So you're incurring the cost in the Medicaid program of the drug being prescribed, but you're not having the outcome you're looking for because people aren't getting a therapeutic dose. You have children, quite a high percentage often of children who are receiving three or more behavioral drugs at the same time. And this concurrent prescription of multiple drugs is not unusual. We've had we've identified cohorts of patients in different Medicaid programs that are on as many as 7 or 8 behavioral drugs each month. The second largest reason why patients don't comply or can't adhere to their treatment regimens is that the complications of administering the regimen are too great. I mean, some of us struggle to take a multivitamin daily. And imagine trying to take 7 or 8 drugs, some of which need to be taken with food, some without, some upon waking, some in the late afternoon or evening.
Chair Carter.
Yes. Pardon me, please. Yeah. Senator Smith.
Thank you. Quick question, and I truly have no clue what I'm talking about other than I have a thought, and so I just want to ask it.
Thank you.
How 100 years ago did parents take care of the children we're talking about without these medications?
Well, I think 100 years ago, extended families and a lot of outdoor time and children were laboring and not probably having to sit still in classrooms and comply with the kind of structure that some kids have difficulty with. And people were not getting treatment. But there are issues of overprescribing or inappropriate prescribing, and one of the things we try to identify is when children are on numerous medications where there may not be a diagnosis to support the treatment, and we try to bring these things to the attention of the prescribing physician and ask them to evaluate the case. In Missouri is one example where we work with the state. The state has actually asked us to identify where children are being prescribed these medications by a family physician or a pediatrician, but not by a specialist in psychiatry, and then to ask that child's case be reviewed by a specialist. So it's really, we are measuring 12 different discrete areas that are typical concerns in these programs, and we develop a letter series with the input of the state Medicaid program and the state mental health authority to ensure that the tone is appropriate, that these are going to be well received in the medical community. And the letters are sent under the signature of the medical director of the Medicaid division or mental health division, or in the case of a Medicaid health plan, the health plan's medical director, asking the physicians to take a look at the prescribing practices we've identified and consider reviewing that. We also offer consultations. If after several months there hasn't been a change in a number of places, we have engaged local physicians who have the respect of the medical community to act as consultants and provide a consultative intervention by telephoning the physician and offering to assist with the case or provide some additional educational information. We also send monthly educational materials where we draw from the research literature and the consensus guidelines, which are published typically in the American Journal of Clinical Psychiatry, so they are broadly accepted in the field. We send these educational materials out to the physicians in a form that allows them easy access to the information and allows them to have at their disposal ready guidelines.
Don't you think, in answer to, in addition to that, 50 years ago, say 100 years ago I wasn't there, but 50 years ago I certainly was in school, and kids stayed at home in closets, hid away from society.
That happened all.
And they couldn't go to school, and they were
treated very indifferent. And so it was only through therapeutic and behavioral medications that many kids were able to even go to school at all. So I know in my generation that's what happened.
Thank you, Senator. Better than my answer. Thank you.
She is good.
Then let me just ask one question while we're here. How much is the cost of this program?
This program actually is in less than 10 cents per member per month. That's in kind of the parlance of managed care that people... It's a very low-cost intervention for the following reason, and many of us having worked in government as regulators before and having worked in the public sector side of managed care recognized a shortcoming of that, which is the attempt to try to control and administer and manage every aspect of care, good and bad. And the focus here is on practice that falls outside of best practice. We do not send communications or contact physicians whose prescribing within the bounds of best practice, and we try to focus on using an educational intervention, not something that deprives somebody of their livelihood by saying we will not pay your claim or whatever. Punishment works according to learning theory, but only as long as the punisher is in place. And we believe in a positive educational intervention where you can have some sustaining change. And we've seen a significant change in our beta test site in having 30% of the practitioners who were the highest and most frequent prescribers of medication outside of best practice guidelines moving within the first year out of that group and not returning to that group. So you have an impact in terms of the change of behavior, which is to the benefit of their patients going forward in themselves, and you have a concomitant cost savings, where the typical trend cost increase in Medicaid pharmaceuticals is between 12% and 15% a year. In fact, the most recent figures from the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services indicates that they're expecting a 14% cost trend over the next 6 years per year, 14% per year. And we're showing savings that are, pardon me?
Just one more. I'm sorry.
I apologize.
In this process, we just go fast.
Please go.
And all these guys back there know me. They know I just get to the bottom line.
Okay.
Okay. So, and are these paid from savings that are in the Medicaid program, or is this considered a separate charge?
This can be from either. In this case, we are presenting a public-private partnership where you've got you want to speak? This is a representative from Eli Lilly is here today, as well as a representative from Bristol Myers Squibb, and I believe they have offered in a public-private partnership to pay for this service, so it would be free of charge to the state. In other places,
we love free,
right?
What do we sign?
And this is the case, and this is being done this way in several jurisdictions. In other cases, we are paid the fee per month. In some cases, one is at risk for the fee against potential savings. There are different arrangements.
So this is like guaranteed savings?
Yes.
Okay. No. Is that what you're saying? No back there? Why are you shaking your head? Questions? Senator Morris, you have any questions?
Oh, well, I'm sorry. This is our experience is that we have achieved savings. I believe what Eli Lilly is offering is to guarantee paying for the service.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And then it is our responsibility to have an effect and produce savings.
Thank you, Bill. So let me just ask the pharmaceutical guys, why are you guys just bringing these people here, knowing we're in the midst of trying to get out of here? See, this is good information. I don't know how we get them back.
Madam Chair.
The committee waiting to come in here.
Please. Madam Chair, thank you. I'm Tracy Davies from Eli Lilly, and we really appreciate this chance. Because we had planned to bring CNS to town along with the Coalition for Responsible Treatment and Mental Health Matters, a bunch of groups were involved in bringing them and organized this. I just happened to be the driver of the car. But
and a fast driver.
Very speedy.
Yes.
And we would be willing to bring them back to another presentation. However, they will be presenting today in room 50 at 3, actually from 3:30 to 5:30, although if you really want to get the presentation, it's from 4 to 4:30. And there's going to be really good food, snacks, all kinds of advocates. And I think it's really worthwhile presentation to hear. However, if it's of interest and you think that we should bring some folks again to give this presentation to decision makers who would be interested in hearing this, I think we can work something like that out.
Well, I think as we try to redesign our mental health system on a statewide basis and in some instances to regionalize it, I think it would behoove this group to want to come back because mm-hmm. I think it would be in the best interest of your corporate bottom line as well as the
best interest of
our bottom line of providing services to be able to do that, to talk to the decision makers. Because one of the things I do know, mm-hmm. I don't think these two fellows have a committee. I'm headed for the Oregon Health Plan Committee, and which started at 3 o'clock. I can't afford some more time. But I was just wondering, because we're rushing you through a presentation that I think is so worthy of hearing. Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Gordon is right there.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I'm on my way to find out why my second grader is getting a C in math.
Okay.
And so I would love to have you come back and give a presentation, but I do have to get to the elementary school. So
I think it's important that you do that.
We're honored to be here, and we would be honored to come back any time that it would be convenient for the committee.
So, Ann, why don't you and Tracy tell me how you think we should proceed from here? What should we go from here?
Well, thank you for asking, Madam Chair. We are going to have, as I said, the meeting from 4 to 4:30, where they'll be presenting downstairs in room 50. I think the consensus of some of the stakeholders, the advocates and others, was to create some sort of a committee or a work group or something that could really figure out how to push something like this along. And I'm not sure exactly the process where the way it would need to go to really make sense and to fit in with what you're doing. But I think it's not going to be just a one-time presentation and suddenly it's implemented. I mean, it takes some people really driving the process.
Okay. Look, can we hear a take about another 5 minutes? Can you spare 5 minutes? Mm-hmm. To hear from the other doctor to make whatever presentation you want to make in 5 minutes. And then what we can do is talk to the chair of Human Services and see how we can get us back together to hear a full presentation with greater levels of appreciation. And then what I'm certainly willing to talk to you and or we can have a conference call by phone to the committee. You know,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Also another way to do that.
Excellent. Madam Chair, I am Dr. Sandra Forker, known as Sandy, and I, too, am pleased to be here today and work with Donna at Comprehensive Neuroscience. I think what I'd like to do is to maybe just go. I think Donna was really helping you see some of the trees. I think I'd like to do the forest and just try to hit what I think it is that makes our intervention special and different than what you usually get. Both Don and I have spent considerable number of years in state government. I was with New York State Government with the Office of Mental Health. And we know, and we have often sat in these presentations during budget hearings, where every year we were taking a look at the Medicaid budget and the associate inflation trends that were really creating lots of concern. This particular intervention, I think it has really two payoffs for you. One is it will flatten inflation for you somewhere between 12 to 15%. And in addition to that, in our beta site, we have been able to demonstrate savings of about 2 to 3%. So
below a flat growth line.
Below a flat growth line. I think that's very important information. But more importantly, what this intervention does is it changes physicians' prescribing patterns to align with best practices. And that in and of itself means that the discussions you have, you can do
And in a legislative session, you do lots of fast fixes. You have to. This has a fast fix, but it also begins to change the culture of prescribing patterns. And I think that's what makes this a unique product. It is very respectful. Donna talked and Tracy mentioned it's very important to put together a group of stakeholders from Oregon who know the type of language that we should put into a letter to physicians that will respect their practice but recommend change. We oftentimes include annotated bibliographies with an article saying why this is a best practice. And the fact that we only focus on that 100 of the physicians whose practices are really way out, they're outliers, keeps this a low-cost intervention, plus that 30% turnover that you see. So you're always having a new 100 doctors, at least 30% new doctors each month that are hearing from you and whose practices we begin to impact. The third benefit of this, which I think is a very, very important one for us to pay attention to, is that it helps identify those patients who have not refilled a prescription so that doctor can, in fact, contact them or in the next visit say, hey, what's going on? Is it side effects? What's happening for you that you're not taking your medicine? Because we all know, if you look at, again, the forest, what happens is that your pharmacy cost for an individual may go down because they're not taking their medication, but you've got a real offset over here because they're in the hospital, they're in the emergency room, and they're using crisis services.
Doctor, does this program mimic a managed care program in that somebody is on top of each individual patient and they are observing the many different medications they're taking and they try to coordinate that better?
The answer is yes, except it takes it to a different level. Donna worked with Magellan, I worked with Value Options. So we have public sector background and we have managed care background. What it does is rather than looking at everybody, that costs a lot of money to look at everybody. What we try to do is to look at the 100 outlier physicians, changing some of the mix of that each month as you begin to change practices towards the best practice guidelines. So it has some of that. It's going to keep looking at those 100, even though some of the membership might change, but we're able to keep the cost manageable, as Donna said, under 10, you know, cents per member per month by focusing on outliers only. And if you look at the managed care companies that are still around and that have succeeded, they've stopped micromanaging everything. You know, they're micromanaging a specific part of a population of a diagnostic category.
Question?
What I would suggest, Senator?
Do you have, I understand that you're presenting this afternoon,
yes,
later this afternoon. Is there a document available that you're presenting,
yes,
from that I could have? I will not be able to attend that other. Okay, thank you.
We've brought copies of the full slide deck.
We're informal, aren't we?
Yes, we are. We're informal. Well, and
thank you.
And did one of you guys need to say anything before we close the committee?
Thank you.
Tracy, thank you. You have a couple of those. This is just a pictorial image of the process where we acquire the data typically sent to us from the claims data for pharmacy. We clean the data and store it in a secure data vault, which meets all HIPAA requirements as well because we do drug studies FDA requirements. We then apply the algorithms I'm talking about to the data so we can create a report, which we send to our customer, typically the Medicaid agency or the health plan, which shows where the outliers are, where the practice sites are, and we can determine within a day or two with them what is the best approach to communicating those practice considerations by letter and or telephone. We call immediately in three circumstances, so there's no delay. And by the way, these letters go out within 5 business days of when we receive the data. We call when somebody has not refilled their prescription.
We call when there are two or more doctors prescribing behavioral medications. Often these physicians don't know about one another, lest they, you know, be prescribing something unwittingly. And the third thing is, if we were to reveal in this a very dangerous level of drugs being prescribed that really could have very untoward consequences.
And I apologize. It's a micro question. Why would a patient have multiple doctors dealing with a mental health
it's
issue?
More common in the fee-for-service Medicaid program rather than in an HMO, where somebody might, you know, go with their Medicaid card and go to an emergency room at one hospital, and they might go to an ambulatory clinic someplace else and might get scripts. And because information systems are not linked in all jurisdictions, one doctor doesn't have a database they can look up and see what else the patient's been prescribed, and it's self-reporting, and so it happens often unwittingly on the part of the practitioners.
I do have to leave, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Dr.
Thanks.
For coming, and
thank you.
We look forward to seeing you back, and I will
thank you.
Be the person to try to make that happen. Yes, sir.
Appreciate it.
Madam Chair, just for the record, my name is Stephen Eliza. I'm Executive Director of NAMI Oregon and also a member of Mental Health Matters. And one of the reasons we wanted to bring this program to you is to show the legislature that there's different options rather than a formulary with prior authorization. This works. And the beautiful part about it is it's patient-centered rather than just a blanket approach to have a formulary. So that's one of the reasons we're doing this.
We really appreciate you coming, and I am just a little chagrined by the fact that we were not able to listen to this presentation, but because it's something I'm really very interested in. But we look forward to meeting with you very soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.